Welcome to the Hospitality Maverick podcast with me, Michael Tinkser. We at Hospitality Mavericks are here to inspire leaders to create heart-centered and profitable businesses from the inside out, the kind that both employees and customers love and support. Thanks to BizSimply for sponsoring this episode as our show partner, and BizSimply is the all-in-one HR, workforce management, rotor operation software designed and built by hospitality experts to make every shift run like clockwork. And we join forces to help the industry find new ways to become even more innovative in how we lead our people, how we operate, to how we grow our businesses, to how we serve our customers. Together, we want to share strategies and tools that can make the industry thrive long term, not just survive.
The reality is very different in the front line. You work with pen and paper. You're standing the whole day. You have gloves, protective equipment. It's noisy. So it's a different reality, and technology has not really permeated all the way through. And that's a lot of the mission that we have at Beekeeper. How do we bring that technology in an effective, simple way to the frontline so that it's really adopted and used and addresses some of those needs?
Today, I'm thrilled to have Christian Grossman, the co-founder and CEO of Beekeeper, joining us here on the show. And Christian brings a wealth of experience and knowledge when it comes to building a great employee experience with digital tools. Christian will share his exciting journey behind Beekeeper, which is a platform that transformed the way hospitality businesses can communicate and engage with their frontline teams. We discover what inspired Christian to co-found Beekeeper and why it's called Beekeeper. We start the conversation by actually taking a quite deep dive into understanding that there is actually a lot of digital tools out there to help desk workers improve their productivity and ability to collaborate. But many of these can't help frontline employees because they basically are not designed to help them. And this limits the possibilities for the frontline employees in the hospitality to collaborate and communicate effectively, which then ultimately impacts the bottom line of any hospitality business. Christian shares some incredible customer use cases from hospitality businesses that have used technology to leverage the ability to communicate and collaborate better, which have impacted their productivity of their frontline employees. We also dive into some groundbreaking research Beekeeper has been done on the state of the frontline employees, as well as what the future needs is from frontline employees when it comes to building a better employee experience and how digital tools can be part of that. We also explore the importance of understanding and valuing frontline employee feedback and reacting on it straight away, and how technology, when implemented correctly, can do a lot of the heavy lifting here for the leadership team. We also talk about artificial intelligence and how that can be critical to improve the current but also the future employee experience in hospitality. If you liked today's episode, it will mean the world to me if you could leave a review of the show on either our website, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. The better the reviews, the better the guests, and ultimately, the better the learning is for you. Now, sit back, tune in, and get ready to be inspired as we explore how you can improve work life and productivity of your frontline employees by leveraging technology. Let's dive in. Today, we will dive into the most important assets we have in a hospitality business, our frontline, because that's where all the magic happens. That's where the revenue happens. That's there where the great experiences are happening. And we're going to talk with Christian for Beekeeper, actually how you actually can use technology to actually maybe get a better understanding of your frontline, and also get confirmation that you might be doing the right thing. It could be in your strategy, but also in your leadership approach. So welcome to the show, Christian. I'm excited about this conversation because I often believe that lots of people's decisions are taken on gut and not data. And I think often that's a part of the problem why sometimes it goes so wrong with engagement.
Excited to be here, Michael. Thank you very much for the invitation. And as you said it, I think the frontline is the heart and the blood of the hospitality businesses. So we couldn't be more excited to be talking about that today. Thanks.
Can you talk a bit about your journey and what you have been building for more than a decade, and what the mission is for Beekeeper?
Yes, absolutely. So maybe I'll start even with a little bit longer than a decade and my background on why the frontline is so important for me. I was born and raised originally in Mexico City. I lived there the first 19 years, and both of my grandfathers were actually frontline workers. One of them worked in a paint factory, the other one in a copper factory. So I spent countless afternoons and summers, of course, watching them, following them, etc., and got a really good feel for how the frontline works, at least in that time. My dad was also a frontline entrepreneur. He built a business around it. So that's also something I would say very much in my DNA. The journey with Beekeeper started, as you said correctly, some 10, 12 years ago when we together as a founding team came to build technology. We started doing a couple of other different projects until we basically bumped into this massive opportunity of how do you digitalize the frontline workers. And it originally started by us hearing from hospitality customers, but also retail stores, restaurants, etc. How do I reach my employees? How do I send messages and then make sure that we're all in the same loop? It was mostly triggered back at that time by M&A processes. So certain hotel chains were being bought by others, etc. And they said, hey, we have a new strategy, new values, new processes. How do we reach people that don't even have an email address, that are all the time on the go, that are in a hotel house doing housekeeping or in the kitchen or serving customers in the front desk? How do we reach all of them? So that's kind of like how we started. It was with three properties here in Switzerland from the brand at that time. It was Swiss Hotel. It was being acquired by the Fairmont and Raffle groups out of Canada. And we did this pilot in Switzerland with three properties. And we drove around Switzerland. It's a small country, so you can do that. We really went at 7 a.m. in Zurich, then 11 a.m. in Basel, and then in Geneva in the afternoon. And by the end of the day, when we came back to show the CEO and the VP of HR what we have done, they were just blown away by the fact that suddenly they could write in a system something and every single employee would actually see it and read it, and they could interact with them at scale, regardless of where they were. And that was kind of like, I would say, the eureka moment of how it all started and how that journey got started. And what we've learned in these last 10 years is that communication and reaching employees is really important. And it's pretty much like tip of the iceberg when it comes to creating a holistic frontline experience for frontline work. So communication is really experience, but there are many other aspects of it, of how do my shifts and schedules look like? What does my training look like? What type of tasks do I have to do? What are my HR services, etc.? Like all of those things kind of like belong together. And that's what we have been able to create at Beekeeper. We call it a frontline success system because it's ultimately all about making the frontline workers successful, making their lives easier, because as we all know, the work is already quite hard in the frontline. So everything that we can do to simplify and support them in the frontline is just helpful. So that's the way we have been starting.
And I hadn't thought about this before, but I was thinking, why Beekeeper? I think I have an idea, but why the name Beekeeper?
Yes, absolutely. So bees are actually amazing creatures that work very strongly in collaboration and as one team to produce something beautiful and delicious like honey. And they have very simple yet refined rules and ways of working together, right? And that's what we try to emulate with our system, to say, hey, we bring something here where your bees can be doing the work out there, but they don't have to be actually bothered what's going on inside and behind and getting tangled up with internal stuff that just drains their energy. They should be doing what they do best, which is producing honey, right? So that's the idea.
And what is like the big mission? Because, you know, getting past a decade with any business is a huge success. Getting past 5 years is great, you know, and maybe getting past the first 2 years is a world of accomplishment for many. But like after a decade, what is the mission of Beekeeper? What is that you are trying to change in the world?
Yeah. So our mission is to connect frontline teams with everything that they need in order to do a great job, because we believe two magical things happen when we achieve that. One of them is the frontline workers truly live better lives. We simplify their lives and we support them. And the second one is that the businesses that they work for also thrive. You know, you have better retention rates, you have more productivity, people are more engaged, you have more positive customer experiences, guest satisfaction, etc. So that's how we see our mission, to really connect the frontline teams to everything they need in order to do a great job.
Yeah, and that's super great, because we all know that, you know, the life of frontline employees is tough, and it's probably going to be tougher. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be more demands on that frontline as businesses are also struggling, typically hospitality, with, you know, still with rising costs and other new, and maybe a challenge we don't even know yet around cost of food, which I've heard the last couple of weeks that chocolate was out 400% up. What else is going to be impacted by water? And these pressures only go one place. They normally go to the front line, is my experience, no matter what. The pressure on the business, in the frontline business, always go on the front line. How do you, can you give some examples about some of the, you know, you started with, you know, a hotel chain of three. Can you talk a bit about some of the clients you work with now and some of the transformation that's happening as they roll out with Beekeeper, and what kind of, how do they use the system and what kind of wins? I guess everybody has a slight different use case, but I guess there's always like some shared learnings where you can really see some big transformation happen as they use Beekeeper.
Yes, absolutely. So by now, I mean, after that story of three hotels, just fast forward the story, we ended up deploying Beekeeper to 120 hotels for 25,000 people. So it became basically the driving change for the whole organization. And after that, other brands started following, everything from Mandarin Oriental and the really big ones and so on. And maybe one really nice example that I would like to share here is a Resorts World Las Vegas. This is the biggest hotel opened up in the last 10 years in the Las Vegas Strip, which embraced Beekeeper from day one. We had the fortune to actually even met before the opening of the hotel. The crazy amazing thing about this story of the opening of the hotel is that they did it actually in the middle of the pandemic. So imagine coordinating all of this. It's a really big property with 5,000 people and close to 4,000 rooms. So coordinating all of that in the middle of a pandemic setting, it was really challenging. And the amazing thing is that they really embraced the idea of, we want to have no paper. If you look at the back of the house in the hotel, you'll find that you always have bulletin boards, paper, oral communication, all of those things. They said, you know what? We want to go digital from day one. They even made part of the job description a requirement that people would have to bring their mobile phone with them. No data charges would be done for them because all the Wi-Fi is provided by the hotel. But they would actually use it as the one and only way to communicate and interact with your teams. So to start actually from the beginning, they did a whole onboarding of 5,000 people through Beekeeper, coordinating, for example, imagine getting 5,000 people onto a hotel. They come, some with public transportation, other ones with cars, to coordinate who parks where and who picks up what when. Everything from uniforms, documentation. Well, documentation was actually digitally delivered via Beekeeper, but uniforms, trainings, etc. That was all coordinating in batches through Beekeeper. And they were able to onboard the 5,000 people within 3 days. That was like an amazing story that we saw. And that was just the beginning of kind of like getting started and ramping up, right? Since then, Beekeeper has become the one-stop shop where on the one hand side, the hotel at the highest level works and communicates with all and every single one of their employees. But each one of the teams, for example, the casino operation teams, food and beverage, housekeeping, etc., they also use it within their own teams in order to coordinate, give tasks to the employees, track execution, provide trainings that are dedicated to the different teams, etc., etc., right? So it's really like a one-stop shop where employees cover, I would say, three main needs. One of them are all of their HR services and HR processes are triggered and started through there and then integrated into a UKG system, into an HRIS system, et cetera. The second one is communication and collaboration, that glue that brings everybody together. And then the third one are things that have to do more with the operations and running of the business. Tasks, changes, for example, the casino operation teams uses our campaigns and communication features in order to communicate all the compliance changes that they do in the blackjack table, in the poker table, et cetera, and making sure that each and every single one of the dealers have seen it, passed the certification, and can actually go on the tables to work. So it's really, I would say, their operating system inside. We call it the frontline success system, because ultimately it's really about driving success of the frontline, which equals success of the business at the same time.
And Chris, that just leads me to, because we did the pre-talk, this book that's called The Service Profit Chain. People listen to the show knows this book, and really interesting research to be done in the 70s that's about trying to understand why are some service businesses more successful than others. And it was really in principle, of course, they care about people, but then they systemize that. They have a system to systemize the right behavior they need to see in the front line and how they communicate. And at that time, they didn't have a digital platform now, but this is like something that really can go in and do that heavy lifting for you as you're creating that operating system for creating the right experience, both for your employees, but also your customers.
100%. And then for also our HR leaders, but in general, our hospitality mavericks, as leaders of the company, what it provides you to have exactly this type of systems that you're describing, Michael, is also a transparency, because the analytics and the insights that you gain from it are unparalleled. And it really allows you to react earlier than what you would otherwise try to just sense it and walk through the through the properties, right? We have examples of some of our travel customers. It's a very big airport in Europe that also deployed Beekeeper for all of their frontline teams. And one of the things that they were able to avoid through these early warning systems that we have in the platform was a strike in the airport. So imagine the amount of money, stress, and everything that they were able to save by actually reacting fast to a situation that in other conditions would have easily led to a strike. So it's those type of early warning signals that you can read and get from this type of system.
Yeah, and I love you bring that up, because I think I mentioned you before we were recording as well. When I was an ops director, I was the first one to implement online scheduling. And of course, that's great for your labor, your efficiencies. And we got all those gains very quickly to control that cost better. But actually what it was for me, it was the map every day looking at the schedule, saying where do I need to be this week? Where do I physically need to show up in my 27 units? And I could see, because I knew what an understaffed restaurant looked like, because I knew them inside out. And if it's understaffed, or you know, maybe there's some people missing on that schedule, you can see straight away, because that's online. You know, there's six shifts missing in this town, in that restaurant or cafe. I need to go there, because that's where the problem's going to arise. That's where the revenue is not going to be. That's where people's going to be unhappy. So how can I go and help them? It doesn't mean that I go and help them by standing. Maybe some days I went into the dishwasher, but actually I was there to understand, why do we actually end up here?
Yes.
And that's the early warning signs. And then you can then go back to the system and find out all the lack of training or whatever it is, and build that. And that was very powerful. And that was where I started really to fall in love with the power of technology as an operator.
100%. And I think what you're saying reflects something very, very important, which is, technology is not a replacement for the face-to-face in the frontline, but it's an enabler and an accelerator, right? And I think I wish more leaders would think and act like you, of saying, hey, I need to be in the restaurant. I need to be in the front, understanding what's going on. And with the help of technology, you can do that in a much more specific and targeted manner to where it's really needed, right? Because you cannot be possibly in those 27 sites at the same time.
No, and it's the 20-80 principle. Pareto's the example. You're 20% of your work, give 80% of your outcome. And I would say I could much better do that when I had that indication of where I needed to be. So I think it's super, super, super important to think like that about technology, and not just think it's replace task and work and time, but actually it can actually help you make better decision on where you need to be to make the most possible impact as a leader. I love to work with the team over at BizSimple, because they are always striving to get better, 1% better every day. So I had to share this with you, because BizSimple have launched a new blogcast, which highlights some of their favorite Hospitality Maverick podcast episodes over time. And if you're new or a hardcore super fan of the show, this is a perfect opportunity to catch up with some of the standout episodes from our massive back catalog. The Simply team has and will be extensively transcribing interesting moments from each episode while providing some new insights on our brilliant guest, the Mavericks. There's already some great write-ups with Mavericks like Chef Chantel Nicholson and the co-founder of Singerman's Community of Businesses, Ari Weinschwein. Find them at thesimply.com/blog and click Blogcast on the right side menu. Enjoy. You also done some really interesting research. So you're building this platform, but you're doing it by actually doing understanding the front line. You grew up, but also you are now researching. You did this massive research piece. Can you talk a bit about what you learned by doing that research piece as a company and share some of the insight? Because there's probably leaders that will be helped by getting an understanding about what you found out around the front line. And then also I think we should touch on the book you shared with me this morning that you've been writing as well. I think it'd be great to hear some learnings from that. But let's start with the research piece first.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Let's start with the research. So at Beekeeper, we are always committed to really understanding the front line. What are the latest trends? What's the sentiment there? So that we can really help frontline organizations in hospitality and other industries to address the most pressing needs there. And one of the ways we have found to be very effective is to actually go and ask the people, you know. We have the blessing of having millions of frontline workers in our platform. So we basically go and ask them last fall a couple of things. One of them was, what are the things that motivate you? What are the things that stress you? And what do you think are things that are inhibiting your productivity? So we did that and got probably the largest sample of frontline workers that you can get. And it's something that we've done already now for the second time. So we even start to see some trends of how things move. And there are a couple of things that we learned from this study. Also, the way we conducted it was by asking three different groups. So we segmented the data by who are the frontline workers, who are those directors of operations and HR managers, kind of like the first line, second line type managers, and then the people in the headquarters, the executive teams. And we got to ask them about those topics, motivation, stress, and so on. And we also did something really interesting, which was asking the managers and the executives what they think the frontline will say and what the thing are the priorities for them. And this allowed us actually to uncover where are the organizations really well aligned and where do we see some signs of what we call the frontline disconnect. The frontline disconnect is this idea that you have the frontline actually quite disconnected from the rest of the organization in terms of understanding of priorities. That's where it starts, but then also disconnected when it comes to information flow and even ultimately on the systems perspective, right? Sometimes they don't even have an email address. So this frontline disconnect plays in many different roles. And that's also something that we saw coming out from the data. So to jump directly into some of the insights that we won from this was, I would say on the first hand, the fluctuation on the frontline continues to be incredibly high. I would even say alarmingly high. For hotels and restaurants, we found that 57% of the frontline workers that we asked had changed jobs in the last 12 months. So just let that sink in. 57% had changed jobs in the last 12 months. That means more than half of an organization basically walking out of the door and then coming back in, right? Imagine the amount of work when it comes to training, onboarding, replacement, etc. Massive. So that's, for example, one of the things that surprised us. And we also, of course, went and asked, well, why is that? Like, why is that happening? What can we recommend organizations to do in order to prevent that? And what we found there was also very interesting. One of the most pressing things for the frontline workers is the topic of money and salary, especially in the face of this macroeconomic pressure of increasing interest rates, higher inflation rates, et cetera. All of those things are putting real pressure on everybody's pocket. So that was reason number one. Of course, the recommendation there to just pay more is not necessarily actionable or doable for everybody. But what is really interesting is that that's by far not the only reason. Even though it's number one, there are a number of other reasons that people mentioned. For example, work-life balance, almost equally close to the topic of salary, but a very real reason for people changing jobs that they're looking to improve their work-life balance. That's something that an organization can act upon much quicker with not a huge amount of cost, where culture, communication, technology can definitely help to address. And then the third ranking reason was to have better career perspectives, to have better career perspectives, to develop themselves inside the organization. That's also one of the main reasons. So that's also something that organizations can do, can in fact address and help mitigate this very high fluctuation number. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the insights. Yeah.
And it's very interesting because when I looked at it, the stats is also like if you take hospitality and compare them to other industries, we are not doing too well. Like, and I'm thinking other frontline industries.
Not at all. Not at all. I must say hospitality and restaurants in general are the two highest ones. That's something we found. I would say the ones that are on the other end of the spectrum, still with really high fluctuation rates, but are anywhere in the 30-35%, healthcare and retail. Those are the two where we saw fluctuation to be a little bit less. And in the middle of the pack, I would say something like production, logistics, construction, that was kind of like the range, right? So hospitality, the more people-centric industries like restaurants, hospitality on the higher end, production, construction, middle, and then healthcare and retail on the lower end. Mm-hmm.
In the research, was there any learning? I guess there's also learning of what some of the best are doing, because I guess some will perform very high on this. Could you share some of those, you know, maybe not the organization, but more like what is it that they're doing to get this right, you know, and address these top three challenges, which it's in principle not new. They have always been there. And I guess the second one is really interesting because in principle is mental health and actually people are actually getting more stressed about their work than anything else. I saw another stat. Give us a bit of an insight into what some of the great ones are doing or some of the mavericks, as I call them.
Yes, for sure. So I think I would highlight two domains where we see really good practices having a very big impact on the fluctuation rate. One of them is those that really pay a lot of attention to the onboarding topic and making sure that those first 30, 60, 90 days are just executed flawlessly. According to a playbook, we have seen it over 1,300 times with all our customers. Like, what are the best practices to do it? That we have basically a template blueprint that you can take, tailor, tweak, and adjust for your organization. But that basically guarantees that you are onboarding your employees in the fastest possible way, in a way that doesn't leave openings for doubt or churn later on. And that really gets them productive as fast as possible, right? So the onboarding topic is, I would say, one where when we see companies thinking consciously about it, you really see the fluctuation rates come down. And then starting from there, I think that's just the beginning of the game. But then thinking about the whole employee life cycle and how to manage that, that's also a really important topic, right? What are the touch points that you need to make sure that the employee has? How are you developing them throughout their career to also address some of these reasons? If you look at the study, there are even deeper insights into other domains of stress, of productivity. But I would say at the highest level, onboarding and employee life cycle management are two really, really important areas where we see the best in class just outperforming the rest of the pack. Definitely. And maybe there's another aspect that also surprised us also when asking about stress factors, which was the topic of safety and security at work. That's a very interesting one where we found that managers tend to think about security, and rightfully so, as how many incidents happen, right? That's kind of like the KPI. As long as there's no big incident, we're all good, and that's it. And of course, the trainings around it, right? But the organizations that are really outperforming the pack and that also address some of the insights that we found through the study is that frontline workers are craving for a more secure work environment. That was, for example, one of the top three priorities when it comes to stress factors that Frontline mentioned. But on the management side, that's only priority number seven. And you know what happens with priority number seven on the list? Not much. So that disconnect is one where organizations that address it properly and quickly can gain a lot of more comfort and loyalty also from their employees. And what was very interesting is that for employees, it's not only about there's an incident or not, but it goes even wider into psychological safety, feeling also well within in the environment that we're in, even physical safety up to a certain extent, of course, but then also going to even simpler things like, can I have a locker room where I leave my stuff locked during my shift and it will not get stolen? Like even those type of safety or feeling safe type of topic is something that we got also, and we could elicit out of the text responses that we got from our frontline workers. So that's probably like the two big areas: onboarding with employee lifecycle and security and safety in a much broader sense than only incidents that are more gravity.
Okay. What I was thinking at the onboarding, and I was actually talking with somebody else yesterday, and it's lying here on my desk next to me, and he was saying, how can I actually improve my onboarding? And I said, so what is the purpose of your onboarding? Is for them to get an understanding of some basic things that we need to understand. There's some legislation, there's some safety things, but it's actually getting that first second, you maybe already done in the recruitment process, a deep dive into what the culture is. And and the best example I've seen that's companies, this is a very small business. They created this book of culture. And in here you will have an idea about how they approach things, and you have the whole philosophy.
Awesome.
And in principle, and they do it in a paper format, but actually they before people get to a job interview, they give them that. If you can't buy into this, don't come to the interview, just stay away. You can keep the book. But then the onboarding is about hitting all these pillars. And I think the best companies has actually written down what they believe and actually train those people through it. And actually thereby they avoid a lot of that churn in the early days, because like people, they know what they signed up to, and they can still, and I also heard, you know, you have SAPers in the US that pay people $5,000 to leave the job if they don't think they fit to the culture. And there's so many other, but I think spending the time on actually getting very clear on that, because that informed the rest of the experience in my view as well. That's the experience you deliver through the whole employee journey, digital or non-digital. And I think often that work is not done, that sitting down and doing the work of writing down your beliefs and principle, your culture, the beliefs and behaviors you want to see.
That's absolutely true. I can only underscore that, I mean, technology is just an enabler, right? Like it will not necessarily solve those hard questions that you as a business and leaders need to answer right now. And then the rest can be actually supported, enhanced, and amplified by technology.
Yeah. You also wrote a book. And why a book, Chris? Because you run a technology business. Why, you know, write a book?
Why old school book?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's exactly what we were discussing before, right? I think taking the time to write what you believe in and what your learnings have been and how you see the future helps A, to articulate it better, and also to amplify that and share that with the rest of the world, right? So the book is called The Rise of the Frontline Worker. And it's basically how to turn the frontline workers into a big competitive advantage for frontline businesses, right? It can be found in Amazon, and I'm sure we can add the link afterwards in the caption notes. But it was actually during the pandemic time. I didn't have enough to do during the pandemic time, so I wrote a book. But it basically is the story of these last 10 years almost of Beekeeper and what we've learned and why we are so convinced that the frontline workers are the single most important piece of a frontline business. They're the heart of it. And the more we can empower them and enable them with all of our support as leadership, I think the better the business will. And that's a philosophy that we see throughout all of our customers, throughout industries. Those businesses that really perform well have that clarity of thought really from the top to the bottom, and you can see it and feel it. So I would say it's a it's paying honor to those doing the hard work.
And it's quite interesting. And I had a guy called Larry Coleman on the show recently, and he's written 3 books. He's only published them inside the company. But the first one, he had all his leadership books out on the table: Ken Blanchard, Good to Great, and Service Profit Chain. And actually, he had to write that book to scale his business. He said, "If I don't write that book," and then it became an internal document that actually set the journey out for the business now almost 35 years later, taking it to the next stage. And sometimes you actually have to sit down and do that work in any business, although you can explain to your customer what is that transformation we're actually doing. But coming back, you say it's very important to take care of these frontline employees. Then there must be, you know, the productivity CEO or leader saying, well, AI is going to help me now because I can reduce a third of my workforce or maybe 50%. But what is your view on AI? Because lots of interesting conversation about what AI can do for us and how scary it can be as well for the human race.
Yeah. So I think AI is here to stay. We're probably still in the beginning of the cycle where there's a lot more noise than actually real value. And what is really interesting is that I think if you look at some of the studies, the jobs that are most at risk to be replaced by AI are not really the frontline worker jobs, you know, because you might have seen this very funny graph that was in social media a while ago, which was basically the scaffolding of a building that was just getting under construction, something written on it like, hey, ChatGPT, can you just finish this building? Well, it doesn't quite work like that, right? So ChatGPT will not be able to finish a building and work it, at least yet. Maybe one day it will. But I think it's much more the jobs that have those repetitive nature, maybe in finance, maybe in support, maybe et cetera, that are probably the first candidates to be, I wouldn't maybe say completely replaced, but at least very strongly supported and enhanced by AI, right? What I find really interesting is the question, what does AI can do for the frontline? Because nowadays we hear all of these great tools, ChatGPT, Midjourney, et cetera, and all of those use cases, if you think about them, are actually geared towards an office worker. Summarize this presentation for me, or summarize these minutes, create a presentation, create a slide deck for this, et cetera. So all of those things are things that maybe you and I do behind a PC, but people that really work in the front line have little or nothing to do with it. Yeah. Now, the very interesting question is, what can AI solve for the front line? And I think we need to start more from the topic of what are the issues and what are the pains that the front line is experiencing nowadays, and how can that technology help them? And maybe just before I go into a couple of examples of how we think about AI for the frontline, the other important thing to keep in mind is there's a adoption problem of technology in the frontline, which is, as of today, many people don't even have an email address. They cannot log in into a normal system. And it's 2024, and email has been around for how many years? You tell me, right? Decades. Yeah. So it's not lack of creativity, but it's the reality is very different in the frontline. You work with pen and paper. You're standing the whole day. You have gloves, protective equipment. It's noisy. So it's a different reality, and technology has not really permeated all the way through. And that's a lot of the mission that we have at Beekeeper. How do we bring that technology in an effective, simple way to the frontline so that it's really adopted and used and addresses some of those needs? And I think that goes even beyond AI, because the first thing is, how do you even put AI in the hands of a frontline worker if they don't even have any sort of digital identity, digital access to anything, right? So I would say it's starting with the basics and putting those foundations in place of how do I reach those frontline employees? How do I enable them in a technological way? And then AI can be very well used to solve some really acute problems that they have. And I have a couple of examples of things that we have been working at Beekeeper. One very clear one, for example, is the topic of language and language barriers. You know how diverse the frontline workforce is in hospitality, in restaurants, et cetera. You always have a mix of languages. So it's very, very seldom that it's just one language and everybody understands it perfectly. So that's something that already some years ago we started innovating at Beekeeper. in making sure that any and every single type of content on our platform can be translated into 100 different languages thanks to machine learning and AI. And that was just pure text translation. Now we're also exploring how do you translate a video training into all of those different languages. And you might have seen already these fancy videos where the same person speaks Chinese and then suddenly English and then suddenly Spanish flawlessly. So I think those type of things are really, really valuable and impactful for the frontline. The moment you are making more and more things available in a way that can be directly consumed and very well understood by the frontline worker in whichever language they speak.
Mm-hmm. I love you because, like, you know, the best impact or best leadership often is created when I've been looking at what really great organizations do. This asks the potent question. It's really a potent question, is that how can AI actually help the frontline worker? And actually, how can we actually use it to make the experience better? Because there's no doubt about, I was on the panel last week, all the admin function will be automated and the quality of that work will be faster and better. But again, how do that actually probably doesn't take away the shift? There will maybe be a robot at some point, but still there will be, it's about what kind of experience are you actually delivering? Because actually, when you go to hospitality, I go out, and I wrote about it the other day, I actually go out to have an experience, and the food has to be good. And it's important, it's really good for me because I'm a foodie as well, but it's really about what I walk away with, that touch it did in me when I was in that venue or met that person. And it's not much sometimes. And that bit AI, I think even if you train the AI well, will not make me feel when I look at it on a screen.
100%. I think only humans can connect with humans in the way that we do it, right? And that's something where I think AI can play a role in making sure that humans can have most of their time and bandwidth to do exactly that, to deliver an amazing experience to the guest and do less of the repetitive stuff that they have to be doing over and over and over again, paperwork, filling out forms, checklists, etc. That all can be automated and it can be supported really well with AI and technology.
I want to ask you a couple of questions more before we drop off. If you would like, you know, give any top advice from your learnings working with the front lines as a principal, observing the front line since you were born, what would your top advice be to leaders out there that's building a business as a force for good through their front line?
I think as a leader, one has the responsibility to just do everything in your power to make their life as easy as possible, because the work that it happens on the front line is already damn hard, right? So the more we can support them with things, technology, processes, et cetera, that remove the friction, the better. I think that's one. And the best way to find that is actually to ask them, not to assume, because that's something that we see a lot in this frontline disconnect, that headquarters leaders tend to maybe assume with perfect intentions and everything about what are the things that is going to be most helpful for the frontline workers. And that's where initiatives from the headquarters completely miss the target when it comes to expectations in the frontline. So I think closing that gap as leaders in understanding and getting close to the frontline, that's probably one of the most powerful ways to align the whole organization.
I love that, because actually we sometimes also rely too much on technology.
Yeah.
And technology can't ask as a human, as we talked about, for go in the frontline. Ask those questions, be there, observe as well, because you can see a lot by just observing and not trying to be the dominating factor in the room. What is your favorite book besides your own, I better say, that you give away 9 out of 10 times if you have to give away a book right now to someone?
Yeah, so I mean, we talked briefly about this one, The Obstacle is the Way. It's one that also during the pandemic kind of like resonated very much. This stoic mentality of, look, there's no drama. Things happen as they happen and you have to take them as they come. And you always have this minuscule moment to choose how you react to things. So that I think is very, very powerful in between what you see and perceive and how you end up reacting as a person. So that's certainly one of my favorite ones. Lately, actually, to my parents-in-law, and to my parents, I also gave one, which is called Outlive by Peter Attia, which also blew my mind about how he thinks in terms of, how medicine needs to evolve into much more of a proactive approach and putting prevention in the forefront rather than reacting too late. So that's certainly another one that I very much enjoyed lately.
Yeah, and there's two great books. I have not read the whole of Outlet, but I listened to a lot of his podcasts. What's really interesting is longevity. We've forgotten a bit about that in society, both on our own health, but also from businesses. Mm-hmm. And you've been building a business that's now been around for more than a decade, and that's start to give some longevity factor. And I think it's really interesting when you look at the most successful companies, he has this longevity factor because they prevent, they try to be ahead. And it doesn't mean they have all the newest marketing. Actually, some of them, just lives totally under the radar. It's not very sexy businesses, like Southwest Airlines in the US. It's not a very sexy business. They fly to A to B, but they just keep on doing it very well, and they optimize their business, and it's about 1% improvement all the time. And then Obstacle is the Way, as people would know, is one of my favorite books as well. And this is, I think often it's misunderstood, and maybe you think the same, Chris, that stoicism is about this, you're just that cold, you don't have emotions about things, but exactly having the tools to regulate those emotions when they are not helping you, because often a very emotional reaction to things are not very helpful for you or for the people around you.
For the others, 100%. Yeah.
What is because I love quotes as well, and that's something we use a lot here on the show, and I always ask people, what is your favorite quote? Because I almost see it like a mini university, and it says a lot about what kind of thinking that's going on in the individual's person. And that I have five life quotes I normally say, but
amazing. So one of the first ones that came to mind when you mentioned this is this quote, which says that a ship is safe in a harbor, but that's not what ships were built for, right? Mm. So I believe growth is outside of your comfort zone, very much like the ship has to sail out from the harbor, and there might be storms, there might be things that happen, but that's what you are made for, to kind of like sail and cruise through them, as opposed to being nicely tied in a harbor where everything is safe, but that's not exactly what we're built for, right? So it's, I think, a nice encouragement to go out beyond the comfort zone into that growth zone. And that's why that quote resonated with me.
And it comes back to obstacle is the way again, because you need to lean into the obstacles to get to the other side. And sometimes that we spend too much time avoiding the obstacle or the challenge in front of you instead of just leaning into it and say, I will figure it out. I'll take one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, and I will figure it out. I will get on the other side. What is the one question, Chris, you wished I've asked you, and what is that question, and what would you have answered?
I was thinking that, and one of my favorite things about working with the frontline and the mission that we have at Beekeeper is the impact that we have with the frontline workers. Mm-hmm. So actually, as you were talking about this example of how you use the shifts and the schedule for you as a director of operations to know where to go, I was also thinking that there's a story that I would love to share with your audience.
Yeah.
From a housekeeper, her name is Maria. She was mm-hmm. in a hotel in San Francisco, one of the very first users that we onboarded onto the platform. And it was a very interesting story where we were onboarding, and during our onboardings into the platform, one thing we do is we run basically activation sessions where we go on site with the employees. We explain them why this is great for them. We help them onboard, download the app. And as we were doing that, Maria started crying. So we thought, oh, did we say something wrong, or we offended her? What happened, right? So we went to her and we asked what was going on. And she explained us that so far she had been basically traveling every single Sunday from her home to the hotel for 1.5 hours each way, so 3 hours in total, to basically just stand in front of the bulletin board and see the shifts and the schedules that she had. And that was 3 hours of a Sunday that basically she had just to invest to know when was she going to work the next week. And that's something that is completely unrelatable, probably for most of the audience nowadays. Like, why wouldn't you just take a picture and send it? Well, there are frontline workers that maybe don't have a phone, don't have the trust to actually ask for it, and prefer just to do it by themselves. And this was having a really big toll for Maria in her personal life as well. So by putting those shifts and schedules directly onto a mobile app that she could have directly and see her shifts without having to travel, suddenly she had 3 hours back on her Sunday to spend with her family.
Mm.
So that for me was a really great and powerful example of how sometimes this status quo of the frontline has terrible ripple effects into even the personal lives of the frontline workers that most of us probably don't even see or imagine that can be happening nowadays. So
yeah,
that's probably the one question and answer I would have.
I think it's a very good lesson as a leader that you don't perceive that everybody has a smartphone or everybody have access to things that you have, your emails and so on. And I think often we think that, oh, well, everybody has that, you know, they can just download the app. They might have a phone, but they might not have apps on it, or they maybe only have access to the internet at work because they can't afford to have an internet connection. It's a question about, are we bringing food on 3 times a day or are we having internet connection?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And as you say, and sometimes it's like, hey, we have this system that has already a mobile app, right? Like everybody should use it. If you download it, the first thing you see is login with your email. Boom, dead end.
Yeah.
No frontline worker will ever be able to use it, right? Despite having a mobile app for an HR system or a scheduling system, et cetera. So you need systems that are conceived and thought through well for the frontline.
This was a great place to end the conversation, Christian. Really spend your time understanding what does actually your people have available and what do they need to actually do a better job and actually have a better life. Where can people connect with you online? We'll put the book in the show notes and then so on. But where's the best place if people, oh, this is super interesting, I want to know more about this.
Yeah, for sure. We can also put my LinkedIn profile on it. I'm very active there. I love to connect with all of you. So please reach out, follow me, and let's connect on LinkedIn.
Great. Chris, I send you and the team at Beekeeper power and energy for the journey ahead for improving the lives of the frontline employees. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much. And hi, everyone. And bye-bye. Thanks a lot.
I really appreciate that you're listening in. So if you enjoyed today's conversation, please share with others, rate it or give it a review. Or subscribe to one of our channels, which all can be done via the website hospitalitymavericks.com. I believe that reading books is key to become a great leader. So I've helped you with a curated list of some of the books that have impacted the guests here in the show and myself over the years. Find it on Hospitality Mavericks website, hospitalitymavericks.com, under the reading list. A big thank you to BizSimply for supporting us, bringing great insights, strategies, and tools to help leaders to become better every day. Check them out at BizSimply.com, on their social at BizSimply or BizSimplyHQ. You can also email them directly at podcast@BizSimply.com. If you have any ideas and feedback for the show or other thoughts, reach out to me via LinkedIn or my email, michael@hospitalitymavericks.com. I'm Michael Tingsa, and you've been listening to the Hospitality Maverick podcast show. Be Maverick.